Well, I made JG, and then of course they came up with a system of points so you could get out. So we kept counting the points. And one little story, at the end of the war, I found myself in Japan, in the Japan harbor. And they promptly put me on ship. And Tokyo. Yokohama. They probably promptly put me on shore patrol duty. Shore patrol means you have to carry a gun. Now, they had issued guns to us, were officers, and I was tucked away somewhere. I didn't even know how to shoot it or what to do with it.
They gave you guns and didn't teach you?
Well, they taught me, but it went in one ear and out the other. I was never planning to shoot that gun. I don't know what I would have done. They put me in shore patrol duty right after the armistice was signed. With another, was this other fellow, the Jack Parent, the Jewish guy. So we said, what the hell? So we went up in a hill somewhere, out of town. We stayed there the number of hours we needed to stay. And we came back. That's how a Jewish boy looked at having to fire a gun. But that was the... and then the points came out, and they said, oh, they'll never... and I was ready to go. And I said, what do I do with my commission? Oh, they'll never let you get rid of your commission. In the Navy, they keep your commission forever. You're always on call. What?
Stop a second.
So, and anyway, I got out, and I said, then I wrote a letter to the Secretary of the Navy. And in 6 months, I got a nice letter back saying they accepted my resignation. I got out of that. Didn't want any part of that. So, next step, where do we go from here?
Well, you get out of the Navy.
I'm out of the Navy, right. And I went back to get my job back as a supervisor.
Right.
And she said, oh, well, you've lost these 3 years. I didn't know what to do. I was upset. And, but on my way out of the Navy, I stopped in Chicago to pick up Eleanor.
Forget Eleanor.
And I said, well, I'll go see the, while I'm here. And I was in my uniform. I hadn't even been mustered out yet. I went to see the head of the Federation in Chicago. Well, no.
What was his name?
Samuel Goldsmith. Terrific, terrific executive. One of the old-time executives. And he offered me a job, which I didn't necessarily take because I thought I was going to get my old job back, but I had it in hand. And I walked in there in my uniform, and, you know. I got back to Boston and discovered they wouldn't give me my job back. I said, well, I got a job. And I went to the Federation, which was my first move into the Federation movement. That's where I started my Federation career, in Chicago. And that was a great thing they did for me, not giving me the
job back. Things always happen for the best.
And I didn't know too much about Federations, except I knew that my sister said that you know, they paid better, and, you know, more administration and so forth. And for years thereafter, the executives and the laymen at the Federation in Boston said that they missed the bet. That somehow or another, when they learned, and I did tell them that it didn't make a strong enough push to get me on there, a local homeboy and so forth. But anyway, I went to Chicago, and that was, spent 3 years in Chicago. Met with the department. Eleanor was working as a medical social worker at Mount Sinai Hospital. And
worked at the Met. Mount Sinai?
Mount Sinai Hospital. And we enjoyed the 3 years. And they gave me a job handling the youth division of the campaign or something like that. Maybe some trade division, learning fundraising, basically at that time. And 3 years later, I get an offer of a job from the Council of Jewish Federation. Council of Jewish Federation is then and is today the National Association of Federations, like National Chess and Councils, the National Council of Federations. We were all affiliated with them on a voluntary basis. They were a trade association. Council of Jewish Federation. They were our trade association. And they had...
In New York?
In New York. They had regional directors in about 8 areas of the country who would travel around their areas consulting and giving advice and information on the latest trends and so forth and so on, what were the other cities doing in the Federation movement. And they had an opening in the Southwest. And the headquarters was Dallas. And when my wife heard that I was going to do that, she had got terribly upset. She said, there were enormous bugs around the streets. Never been out of a big city, and neither had I, as a matter of fact. Oh, it's going to be awful. Well, I thought about it, and the money was better. And it looked like it was a step in the right direction to become a consultant. So we moved to Dallas, Texas. And we spent 5 very pleasant years in Texas. Dallas, to this day, hides its problems. If you go to Dallas, and if you don't look for the depressed population, you won't find it.
That's true.
You won't find it. Unbelievable. Just as if it didn't, as if it didn't exist. And the people all had, the Jewish people were all in the best of clubs. There was no discrimination because there weren't that many Jews there at the time in Dallas, maybe 10,000 or less. A lot different today, but those days. So they were in the best clubs, and they met a totally different crowd, group of people in Texas. A lot of the Jews in Texas came in the 1880s from Galveston, through Galveston, in the 1860s. They became entrepreneurs, as they all do, and some of them went into the oil business. And there was one, her side, but the stranger. And there was, and I used to travel to about a dozen cities in the area that had federations. There was a federation in Houston, maybe 10,000, Dallas was one. Waco, Texas had only 1,000 Jews, but they had a federation. Fort Worth, Texas had 1,000 Jews, but they had a federation, which raised money for overseas and some local for the Jewish transients that would come through, occasional family that needed some help, and San Antonio, so forth. And we had, it was wonderful, I used to travel around. I'd leave the house on Tuesday morning, get 2 cities and be home Thursday for dinner. And I did that for 5 years. And the laymen were marvelous, just wonderful. The Jewish laymen, they took in and sat at their pools. And it was really a wonderful, wonderful life. And it was in Dallas that we adopted our son. And that was a very happy experience for us.
Name?
Bob. Robert. Robert A.
Robert.
And Bob, who to this day is a joy, so he was adopted there. And Elna took the work off for a while, and then she went back to... Oh, and Elna there worked for Southwestern Medical College also. Mm-hmm. She began to get into research in those days. She became a pretty good research person. And so that was Dallas, Texas, and 5 years, lovely. And I got a little tired of the traveling. And in the business, in the social, and after all, there are only like 100-odd federations, and not many more than that today in the whole country. And so everybody knew that nobody stayed as a regional director overly long. You wanted to move up in your career, and if you wanted to move up in your career, you had to go somewhere else. I'm in five places before I ended up here. Just had to move along. And probably one of the more interesting things that happened to me in Texas, which was so typical of Texas. Texas in those days was Democratic, but conservative Democratic, you know, the kind of Democrats we have. And all of a sudden the group was organized, Democrats for Wallace. And I got involved with it. I don't think anything else.
Against Truman?
Huh?
Against Truman election?
I don't know which one it was. It just, there was...
The later Wallace, the... Which Wallace you're talking about?
It was Wallace, this would be 19... When was I... Where, do you have my...
Resume? Never mind. Keep going.
It was the first Wallace, I think. I don't remember which Wallace this was.
Excuse me.
Yeah,
they both ran for president.
It may have been a primary
for Henry Wallace.
It was a primary for Henry Wallace.
Henry Wallace.
And I always been a Democrat. My family was always Democrats. My father was a strong union member. I remember the days when he would tell me about what he had to go through, but that's coming here from, you have many of those stories, I'm sure. But in any event, the... So I went to a meeting, addressed a meeting. I was in the middle of a meeting somewhere. And a few days later, the head of the executive of the Dallas Federation, Irving Goldberg, his president, then a judge, wanted to see me. He wanted to see me. Would you believe it? They called me in a very nice way. Said, doing a terrible thing to the Jewish community in Dallas, identifying with a left-wing Democrat. It's all right to be for the Democrats. That was okay. But a left-wing...
What year are we in the cross
moment? This should have been, let's see, I was in, trying to recap, from 42 to 45, I was in Chicago. It should have been around 46, 47, in through that area.
That's right.
Before the big witch hunt for the Congress.
It was 48. It was the election for Truman.
That was it. That was
an historian.
That's right. You're right.
And Henry Wallace was running for president. Was running for president.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That was right, 48. And I promptly stopped. And I'm like, career to take, I'm thinking, so that was the end of that. I didn't lose my job or anything like that, and he was very sweet, this guy, but he told me, because they were very careful, a small group of Jews. So then, from Dallas, a job opened up in Syracuse, as the head of the Federation. Small community, about 10,000 Jews, and I would be the executive director. And I thought it would be a step up. Eleanor was very happy in Dallas.
She died, there weren't great big bugs all over the place.
Right, but so we moved to Syracuse. And we spent 2 and 3 years very pleasantly in Syracuse, running the Federation, learning the Federation business. And I did everything from put out the newspaper, ran the women's division, the director of it, handled the supervisor, a small center, supervisor, Jewish family agency, that type of thing. Syracuse must have been very cold, a lot of snow, but very pleasant. We liked it. We liked everywhere we went. So we liked it. And
General Electric dealing there? Did you have any dealings with GE?
No. Not GE. Though some of my friends worked for them. Well, no special dealings. No.
In those days, did they give money?
No.
Matching funds?
No. Way back then, nothing. And the Jewish community was like any other, few wealthy guys, and friendly, nice. And Eleanor went to work for a hospital there, and I did my job, and then I was offered a chance. Then I got my big break. I was offered a job as the campaign director in Cleveland. Cleveland was then, and maybe to this day, the premier federation in the country. Well known, did the best fundraising job, it had the best institutions, the best hospitals, the best centers, and a very solid Jewish community of about 80,000 at those days. I forget, Eleanor and I debated. We didn't want to leave Syracuse either. The executive had seen me some meetings and so forth, and they needed an executive director. Their executive director, their campaign director, was leaving for Pittsburgh. So I thought about it and thought about it.
What was his name?
Bob Hiller, H-I-L-L-E-R, Robert Hiller. We're friends, you know, we see each other in Florida quite often.
Hiller,
H-I-L-L-E-R, he's since retired.
Was going to Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh, right. So we chatted about it, and I don't know, they were offering me more money, not substantially more. Eleanor said, no, I asked him for a little more money. Over the years, she became my agent. Did a good job with it too. Particularly when I became a consultant. In any event, she says I should not use the word in any event too much. I keep repeating myself. She says, I was about to say it again. I called up the executive director.
Which? Who?
In Cleveland, who had offered me the job. Well-known guy, Henry Zucker, Z-U-C-K-E-R, still living, retired. I said, well, it's interesting, but I'd like another $1,000.
Two K's, Zucker,
Z-U-C-K-E-R.
C-K-E-R.
Mm-hmm. And I really don't tell you the story because it's attached to something that happened to me later on. And he came back to me a day later. Okay, you got the $1,000. So we went to Cleveland. Got to Cleveland. And we had already, by that time, decided.
What year was this?
That's what I need my.
That's on the resume. Let it go.
It's on my resume.
It's okay.
We already decided, since we're moving around, the hell with it. Whenever we move anywhere, we were going to settle down and buy a house, which is what we did in Syracuse. Got a house, sold the house. And so we got to Cleveland, and while we were looking to buy a house, they gave us a place to live, which was an apartment they owned in around 100th Street, right in the heart of the black neighborhood. But a miserable black neighborhood. So there we were with Bob, with about four or five, living in this apartment. Well, I think we were living there free rent, as a matter of fact. And then one day Eleanor came down, and there was Bob playing with this kid, and they both were playing with the kid's knife.
It's like today.
I said, Eleanor, we got to do something. So we finally found a place to rent, and then eventually we bought a place in Shaker Heights, lovely area of Cleveland. And Cleveland was a wonderful place because the executive, he prided himself that all of his employees owned homes. He was a wonderful guy, just a wonderful guy.
Who was the executive?
Henry Zucker. That's
same guy, yeah, Henry Zucker.
And so I go to work there as a campaign director. It's a big community, it's a very proud community. They're always number one in everything.
by was...
Silver.
Silver.
Abba Hillel Silver.
That's right.
And the other rabbi is Lelibeld, who's still, probably still
rabbi,
there.
Yeah, Rabbi Hillel Silver.
And Arthur Lelibeld. It's amazing. I can't remember yesterday's time.
I know. I'm the same
problem.
Arthur Lelibeld.
He was American Jewish Congress president.
Yes, yes. And Abba Hillel Silver was there, and they were both strong, very unusual, though, they strong supporters. Of Israel and the Zionist movement was coming into flourish at that time, strong support, which was made Cleveland such a wonderful place because one reason or another, everybody was part of the Federation. If you wanted to fight with somebody about Zionism, not, but you did it within the Federation. All the German Jews, wealthy people, they were inside, not outside as happened in many other places, New York and other places. And they fought with each other within the Federation. It's only made them strong. And eventually that Federation got to be the place where if you wanted to do anything or be anything, you had to volunteer to do something for the Federation. That particular philosophy stood me in great stead to this very day. And so the very first, so then, I also was in they gave me something to do in leadership development, which is also a theme that I stayed with over the years. So in the leadership development, somebody gave me some money, and we took 10 or 15 people every year, and volunteers, and trained them to be good volunteers, to be leaders. And that was a very satisfying experience, marvelous. And then finally, and then we would take it to Israel with us. It was a marvelous. They still do it here to some extent, although it's changed over the years. And the very first, so I started, I would write memos occasionally to the executive. I noticed I was getting back also red marks all over my memory, like in the Navy. And I couldn't understand what I was doing wrong, if anything. This is the first year I'm there. It was a big opportunity for me. I didn't know what. I talked to him. We didn't know what. Then one day, the executive says, Eric, I want to take you to lunch here. He took me to lunch. He said, I want to apologize to you. You've noticed my red marks and so forth. You once said that the president wasn't crazy about me. I guess I was too naive to think too much about it. I should have worried more than I did. But I want to apologize to you, he says. Ever since the day you asked me for an additional $1,000 over the telephone, I felt aggrieved. Why was I aggrieved? Anybody that has a chance to work in Cleveland should work for less. We eventually became the best of friends, but I mean the best of friends. But until he got that out of his system, and how dare I ask for more money when this is the opportunity? In retrospect, he was right. I mean, because if I know he's not right, but in retrospect, if he had turned me down and not taken me,
he would have gotten
my career would have gone, who knows where it would have gone, is really what I'm trying to say. Because it turned out to be a terrific experience. From that point on, everything opened up wide. And we spent 9 gorgeous years there. And everybody there knew that eventually, and he liked his people to graduate. As a matter of fact, in the country today, there must be 10 or 12 federations, big federations, whose people worked in Pittsburgh or in Cleveland at one time or another.
you'll pardon me, I thought Philadelphia was a major...
It's a big federation, but not a good one.
It was a big, but not good.
Big, but not good. Oh, I say not good. There's all relative terms.
Yeah.
It was never a high per capita in giving, because there were an awful lot of people they just didn't get to. And over the years, I think they've improved, but still, the
not just
the top, the top federations, Detroit and Cleveland, Cleveland, Detroit, they alternated. And Pittsburgh was really, we ranked fourth per capita. That's pretty damn good. We're much smaller than
Yeah, that's true. Cleveland and Detroit.
Yeah, they would alternate every year. Through
But the, by your own words, the top take money is not the only measure. There are other aspects of leadership and organization you're referring to.
Oh, sure.
Good leaders bring in more money.
Yeah, but it's all part of a package.
It's all part of it.
We always used to say that the mark of a, you know, a mark of a good community was that you couldn't have one without the other, is really what we're saying.
Mm-hmm.
That you can't have a good community where people aren't giving forth the best that they can. You can do all kinds of things well, but you're really not going to make the top grade. But, so that was Cleveland, it was a wonderful 9 years. All kinds of experiences in Cleveland. There was a guy there, his name was Lampel, L-A-M-P-L. He was in the there was a big clothing center. Oh, I have a couple of stories about that.
Go ahead and tell them.
Welcome back, don't worry.
Okay. The, but the, this particular story, this guy Lampel.
What's his initial? Good enough.
I'll think about it. I can't
it's okay.
Because they were two brothers. But this guy was in the clothing business. Because it was a big clothing center in Cleveland in those days. And every year he'd have an enormous party. But I mean an enormous party. Hundreds of people, elephants, tigers, he rode in the elephants. It was quite unbelievable. He had this enormous estate. Very wealthy guy.
In the clothing booth, he was in the clothing booth.
Enormously wealthy. And I'd never been to such parties in my life. And apparently he made a point of inviting Eleanor and myself as the campaign director. Had a little bit of prestige to his party. But you know, I pictured a little party. Wonderful. We had great times. They had them on every year. Every year. And then, as I said, there were other guys, all these top-notch industrialists, German Jews, Russian Jews. Oh my God. And then there was, I don't know, one family in Cleveland that really structured my life. Oh, really?
Come on.
The name of the family, I was Rat, the Ratners, R-A-T-N-E-R. There were three brothers, a son and a son-in-law. Leonard Ratner spoke with the heaviest Jewish accent you'd ever want to see. Came as a poor boy with his family, a wife that would never wear a mink coat. Kind of a person. Or a fur coat. I don't know. And early on, he was smart enough to buy up land all over Cleveland and in the right places. So he bought the land, and then he went into the building business. Building supplies. And he was in a very, how can I imagine, he's a good Jew, how do I imagine? Yeah, he's a good Jew. Every Saturday night, his whole family, on command, had dinner together. One brother on every Saturday night. Big temple goer. And he became a millionaire very fast because what he did was that he, if anybody wanted to buy land from him to build houses, he wouldn't let them sell them land until they bought the materials from him. Okay? He became a millionaire and he brought, made many other millionaires, builders, all of, and he would take a piece of all their action. So it got to be fantastically well. With this heavy Jewish accent.
His brothers, the whole family in this business?
Yeah, everybody was in the business. He had two brothers, still living, and a son and a son-in-law. And when I got there, I think the son and the son-in-law, they were getting, must be in their 30s, maybe 40s, and very active in Federation, the whole family was active in Federation. Not only that, but he'd call these guys up on the telephone, and if they weren't going to give, they weren't going to get any land. It was just, that's the way he played the game. But he was such a philanthropic person and so decent. I still remember him to this day going or giving pieces of candy to the secretary. There was a little box of candy. Here he is with this big Jewish accent in a very sophisticated town, full of German Jews, multimillionaires, many of them. He's this guy with this heavy Jewish accent. And they grew to love him. Never got to be president. Son did. Never got to be president because of his heavy Jewish accent. Tremendous Zionist, but I mean Zionist. And so I worked very closely with him in fundraising because he, you know, if they ever had a problem, I knew where to go to. And we had a Jewish hospital there. Eleanor?
What?
What's the name of the Jewish hospital in Cleveland?
Mount Sinai.
Oh, it's the Mount Sinai Hospital. And it was run by the German Jews.